tonight, I'm going to do a little bit of a summary of where we've been over the course of this month, and then we'll do a little bit of a practice for a discussion group. But since I've been thinking about wealth this whole month, and I've taught on it here Monday nights and on Sunday and on Thursday, I've really just begin to contemplate wealth and the practice of everyday Dhamma in a much broader framework, a much broader window of what we're actually practicing with. I mean, we're going to drop these little topics into where we're at, but we're really practicing the paramis, the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, Dependent Origination. We're really practicing with every single thing that we've practiced before, except instead of it being some random concept on, you know, there is suffering, or some random concept of what do I mean by truthfulness, or even the dependent origination wheel. Each individual thing in some random concept, what we're actually doing is practicing with specific topics that show up in our everyday life within the framework of dependent origination or the paramis or the Four Noble Truths or the Eightfold Path. So I want to use the Eightfold Path to kind of help you see what I mean and what we've been talking about all month, in the last two talks we've had. Think of the Eightfold Path can be divided into three sections. Wisdom is one section. It's two aspects. They're called three trainings. We train in wisdom. We train in ethical conduct. And we train in samadhi, concentration, or the meditative qualities. So if we point that three training towards wealth, then what you're looking at is beginning to contemplate your views on wealth, your assumptions around wealth and generosity, and whether you have wealth or you don't, or abundance or scarcity, and all of these different connections that might show up around whether or not you feel like there is sufficiency in your life or not. That view is what you are practicing with, on whether or not the view is actually wise view, or if the view is based in some habit energy, like our basic energies for greed or aversion or restlessness, the hindrances in general. But whether or not your view of your situation involving wealth is open enough to take in whatever's happening. And then the intentions you set. On the first talk, we talked about beginning to see your limitations, beginning to look at what are the self-limiting things that happen around practice. And that self-limiting kind of quality could be your family dynamics around money. It could be your own, you know, trauma you've had in relationship to money. So you rearrange the whole way you're going to be around money, or how you're going to be around giving or generosity, or what constitutes generosity, whether you even think there's enough for you. This is that simple thing. Many people have problems thinking there's not going to be enough for me. And that has a lot to do with how they move through the world. And so that could be this self-limiting view and whether or not you can see the harm in that. Whether you can see the harm or the non-goodwill, you know, the ill will in relationship to some of our assumptions around wealth, and whether or not we're willing to renunciate some of the basic ways we are when we notice harm, whether it's harm to ourselves or harm to someone else. But when we notice harm, are we willing to practice limiting that harm, limiting that behavior? You can look at the second part as ethical conduct. And the Buddha talked a lot about how to deal with wealth. A lot. We talked about last week and the week before. He talked a lot about securing your wealth, acquiring skills and knowledge. So setting a goal and a plan to become a certain profession and then acquiring wealth. Lay practitioners are the fundamental aspect of how the Dhamma is carried, is because monastics don't really have money. So if the Dhamma is going to survive and last, we're the ones that are going to do that carrying. We're the ones that are going to ensure that the Dhamma stays and continues on. So how we are as practitioners in acquiring wealth so we can be able to help in whatever means that we want. It's not that we have to become rich so we can pay for everything, but just the limited amount of giving that we do, we ensure that the Dhamma continues. Every time I give anything in relation to Dhamma, even a Dhamma talk, I think of it as ensuring that the Dhamma continues. That's the reason why I give it. So there's this sense of abundance that comes with this knowing of that for me. In our ethical conduct, there is the precepts, there's right speech, there's right livelihood. And to me, the list of things that the Buddha lined out for how to be with money, to procrastinate around money, so that your timeliness around money. And I think what he was pointing to was the sloth and torpor way that we can be. So this kind of lazy, not really taking care of business. When I look at my life now and the way that I respect money now, and I look at my life when I was younger, and I know I told you guys about how I just blew money. I just went through it like it was nothing. One of the things that I noticed over this month is that I was very lazy with money. I didn't pay attention to it. It kind of came and went. I didn't know how much I had or how much I spent. I just didn't have any sort of earnest respect for the energy of money. And so this being timely with money, being skillful with money, these kinds of ways that the Buddha would talk with people has a lot to do with our ethical conduct, who we associate with. And some people, they may operate in money out of greed and aversion or delusion. And if we're spending a lot of time, that energy is also moving with ours. It doesn't mean that we're greedy, but we're creating the tension that leads to suffering around it. So we got to be careful with who we're hanging out with, how they spend money. I'll never forget, I thought about this during the month. I used to go get my hair done. This woman that lived in the projects in High Point, she used to do my hair when I was younger. she braided it. And so we were both on welfare. So we both kind of were in the same world. And I would go over to her house and she would, you know, do my hair, and we would spend 3 hours, took about 3 hours. We'd spend like 3 hours together talking about life, our kids and everything. But we were both in the same world and we both had the same energy. We both were poor. We didn't have a lot of money, and we both had this sense of struggle. It was almost like we shared with each other this kind of honorable struggle that we were doing. But for me, I did not want to stay in that place. So ultimately, I left and I went to law school. I went to undergrad and I went to law school. And every season, like every holiday season or the end of the quarter, I would come back home and get my hair done again. But what I noticed, what I thought about over this month, is we stopped talking. Can you see that? We stopped talking. Somehow I was moving. I was not staying in the world that we were in when we were first there. We were still good friends in a way that we were very sociable. We laughed a lot. But what we started doing was watching movies. And instead of us sitting around talking about our lives, I no longer wanted to talk in the negative kind of complaining way that you can get when you don't have a lot of money. And I didn't have a lot of money. I was still on welfare, but I had this idea that I was going to move out of that. And so I didn't want to sit at home with her and just get my hair done and grumble about the state of things. So instead, we started watching movies. So we stayed together. She did my hair for many, many years, all the way through undergrad and all the way through law school. But I could see, when I started thinking about, what do you mean changing friends? It's not that so much you have to leave your friends, but you have to understand that when you're beginning to practice and opening the mind, our relationship with other people begins to change and rearrange, and it feels a little differently. But he also said, you know, that you protect your money, so you don't want to, I think it's more like don't cheat so that the government doesn't come and take your property from you. So you protect it from thieves and from the government and from, you know, bad people around you. I have been around many bad people. I've thought about that over the month. Like when I first read it at the beginning of the month, I'm thinking, I don't know any bad people, but I know people, even family members, who use me and want to use me as their bank account. So there's this constant wanting. It's always a sob story. They never get it quite right. I'm going to pay you back. They don't pay it back. And I can feel the frustration that comes from that, which is harm. Do you see what I'm trying to point to? That there's a way in which practicing with wealth is not just about how much money you have, but how is your relationship with the idea of abundance and non-abundance, scarcity. And then the last part is concentration. The other part about ethical conduct is not to waste the money that we have. So we don't want to just let our money squander away. I think that's what I was talking about when I was saying that I just let money go. I didn't pay any attention to it. I squandered it. Not because I'm bad or something's wrong and There's no shame in me even telling you I squandered it. You might think shame about it, but I don't. It's not shame in it. It's this recognition of wisdom that I can see that was disrespectful in relation to money. And I could also be tight with it. So I can have an abundance of money and not want to give it to anybody. So this is the place that we're beginning to look at. And I keep using money, but it's not really just money. It could be a stingy with time. Also time, patience, all kinds of things that we can get stingy with. This the felt sense of stinginess versus a sense of abundance, sense of enough, or there's not enough. So the last way you can begin to look at this is through the Eightfold Path out of concentration. You can look at whether or not I think this the concentration part boils down to the inner things that we think about. And on the first week about the acquiring wealth, we talked about these self-imposed limitations. I think I just made a mistake here, but anyway, I'm going to fix it here in a second. I think the self-imposed limitations, like where our family views are, isn't just about view. It's also about being willing to feel into some of the self-imposed limitations that we have about money and wealth and where we should be in the world with wealth and how we should be in the world with wealth. We impose these limitations on ourselves that keep us in a box around it. And this is more about learning to get quiet enough that you're willing to tell the truth to yourself about how you're being around this money, or how you're being around your treasure, how you're being around just your sense of spirit. Like, do you have a spirit that thinks there's generosity around, or do you have a spirit that's more limited and thinks there's not going to be enough? I got to protect mine. Or do you have a much more open sense that there will be enough, more faith in the future versus the fear that it's a doomsday kind of scenario? I mean, we do live in America, so I understand the doomsday scenario. So I'm not trying to pretend like like you can't read the news. We can have one good day of feeling like it's all possible on Wednesday, and that's pretty much shut at this point. It's all getting pretty back to where it was before. But you also have to be mindful of things like addiction, things like multiple relationships. And at first I thought of this in terms of sexual relationships, like having a lot of partners. But then I begin to think about, no, I have lots of intimate relationships that this idea of abundance and scarcity, the line gets kind of, I don't know, like flimsy here about how to be. There's some people I don't have any problems giving money to, and some people I rarely want to give them any money. And there's just these issues I have about some people I want to support all the time. I don't care what they need, I'm there for them. And some people, if they called me and asked me for help, I would be like, oh yeah, okay, well, let me see if I can find some time in my calendar to kind of help you out. And it's, you know, like, oh, I can see you 3 weeks. You got this 3 weeks. Maybe we can squeeze you in. That kind of felt sense around some people. I'm not so much talking about yogas. I'm not talking about practitioners. I'm talking about people in my life that I have intimate relationships with, that they seem to drain all of my energy, but they don't seem to ever shift their energy towards feeling a sense of self-reliance. So instead, every once in a while, they need to come and connect with me, drain all mine, and then go on about their business until they need me again because they've emptied themselves out, and then they need to come back and drain some more. So these intimate relationships we have, we got to be mindful of this energy that's draining from our sense of wealth, our sense of abundance, and then pressure, putting this lacking, scarcity, emptiness into our space. Gambling, taking a lot of risks. Gambling, not just whether you gamble, play cards, but are you taking risks with your life, your money, your world? Entertainment, do we spend an exorbitant amount on entertainment? We're going to talk about technology next month, but you know, you might have to think about all the little apps that we have that we pay all the little monies for. It seems like, oh, that's not very much money. That's only $8. But you know, it's like $8, $8, $15, $14, $16. And then after a while, you're spending a good chunk of change on all the various little apps that we have to meet our needs. And you don't, we don't necessarily, or maybe you don't, but I didn't necessarily think about how all that adds up. So I begin to think about how much money do I spend on entertainment and how much of that entertainment do I actually use? So the last thing I wanted to say before we take a break and then go into some groups is this idea that overall in wealth, what I think is really important is to begin to change our view around what makes us happy. And as we talked about all month, happiness for lay practitioners comes from the sense doors. So we are going to live in a world where our sensory experience is going to determine our happiness. And sometimes we can get overloaded in the sensory experience, trying to just have a lot of joy and happiness and blissfulness. And sometimes we can get very, very stingy in it and restrict ourselves too much. So for happiness, for a lay practitioner, it is in relationship to our sense doors. I have been thinking about this all month, and I think I understand something that I never really quite understood until we started talking about wealth. But one of the reasons why leaving a retreat is so difficult is because when we're in that retreat, we think this is the way it's supposed to be. And when we come home, we try to make that, we try to make our lives like that. But what I realized over the discussion around wealth is that Buddha never even intended for householders to live that way, meaning that monastics are making a vow and they are entering into a holy life that has a whole barrage of rules to protect them from a sensory kind of overload. We don't have those rules. We don't have those structures. We don't have anything like that. So we are basically bombarded by advertisement, bombarded by consumerism, bombarded by things we're going to talk about next month. And that if we don't make peace with our own life practice on this level of, am I tipping into harm or not, then we can get stuck actually making ourselves miserable, trying to live a way that's not possible as an urban or a lay practitioner. I didn't really get that until I started talking about wealth so much. And then I began to realize, no, as lay practitioners, our path starts with making peace with the life we are living, with the world we are in, with the people we surround ourselves with the amount of money we have, with whether or not I want to make more money, with our level of skill, with who we are as practitioners. And we're going to find our liberation in making peace with that. Every one of us is going to need some extended practice. So when we have an opportunity to do some extended practice, we need to do that. We need to field out, be away, and remind ourselves of where the mind can go when it is free from greed, hatred, and delusion. But we live in sensory worlds. And so we're going to come back in this sensory world and learn to balance this overload of sensations with our practice. And that is our practice. I want to end with this little short poem by Al Zolinoff. I love Al Zolinoff. I didn't even know Al Zolinoff until I got this book. And now I'm like, oh, ow, 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 ow. This is what Al says. Very short, to the point. I receive only to give away. My life is simple and full of surrender. I'm picked up, put down, and in the end, I'm always made clean or broken. Al titled this The Plate. So that's what we are. We are plates. We receive in order to give away. Our lives are simple, but it is full of surrender. We're picked up, we're put down, but in the end, we're always made clean. Or broken. So I'll just sit for a moment. All right, let's take a break, and then I'll also give people time to leave if they want to park. Come back in about 5 minutes at 8:15, and we'll break up into groups and do a little checking in about this. All right. So the way I'd like to do this is on Thursday the other week, I read some definitions on wealth. So I'd like us to just take a moment to close our eyes and just listen to some words and just notice what gets triggered in you. What happens in you when you just hear words? And then when we break off into groups, you'll just I'll just put us in groups of three, and you can just share what resonated with you when you heard these words. So here's wealth: abundance, basket full, boatload, bushel, gobs, lots, plentiful, plenty, volume, truckload, capital, assets, belongings, deep pockets, treasure, valuables, affluence, resources, prosperity, possessions, things. Oodles. So here are some conflicting words, some words that don't represent wealth. Crumbs, a smidgen, a speck, poverty, scarcity, barren, more so, just a portion, absence, deficiency, inadequacy, skimpiness. Let's just think about these words here. Insufficient. Speak about these words. Think about what happened to you when you heard these words. I'm going to put us into groups here. And that's what you're going to share, is just what you thought about. What came up when you heard those words? That's it. So, how was that? No one wants to share, huh? All right, I see the little thumbs up. Oh, there you go, Kaba. Go ahead.
Unmute.
Yeah.
I was intrigued to notice that with the, you know, if I could call them like the more positive group of thoughts, how quickly my felt sense shifted from a feeling of openness to twinges of guilt.
There you go. That's good.
Is it?
Good. That's the point.
Okay.
That guilt isn't real. That guilt is a thought. That's an assumption. Like somehow those words don't resonate with me. Something's wrong. Or something's not right. But that's not reality. That is the assumption. And that's what I'm pointing to. Unless we feel into something like that, we will never question our assumptions around wealth. So really what you're feeling is the assumption that your mind makes when it hears certain words. Not the truth of what that assumption is.
Beautiful. Yeah. Thank you.
Yeah. And you can see that's where your harm is.
It's totally.
It's when that shows up, there's automatically a self-limiting view that shows up that won't allow you to be open or move any further. You're stuck in that view right there.
And I can see how it then would lead me to not be honest and upfront about dealing with my privilege.
That's right. You wouldn't be able to deal with it. You wouldn't be able to talk to people. Think of the people that you get around who don't have privilege, and then you're uncomfortable about being your true self with them because you think that privilege somehow prevents you from being able to be upfront with them.
Exactly.
But, you know, I've dealt with a lot of homeless people, and what they will tell you is the worst thing is not asking for money and people don't give it to you. The worst thing is asking for money and people walk right by. They don't say anything to you. They just walk by like you don't even exist. That is far more troubling than if someone says, I don't have ever. I wish I could, but I can't. Whatever. So it's almost like we think, oh, I can't say nothing to them because there's no way I can help them out. But it's really the opposite. You could just say thank you or I can't help you. And that's more for them. Good. Gary?
Hi, Tuari. Thank you. Hi. It was a great discussion group. Great talk. I just want to add on to your homeless example. I've been working with an encampment for the past 6 months here in a international district, and boy, what you said just now, totally true. Just that's couple folks have come up to me and said, man, you know, you're just looking me in the eye and no one looks me in the eye and just talks to me. Thank you so much. But the thing I was going to originally say was those the non-wealth words, right? That's what I bring in whenever I show up at the encampment. I have to get past that. I see them, I see their crumbs, I see their, I see meagerly, I see, I become a, trying to be a fixer or a helper, and I have to jump out of that.
That's right.
But it's a struggle. It's a struggle.
It is.
Thank you.
But now you can see that even in lay life, we have some serious practice ahead of us. It's not like you have to go into the monastery in order to practice with deep practice. We can practice with deep practice, even in our lay lives, with sensory experiences. It's not easy what we're doing here. It takes something. Yeah, Bob.
I just wondered if Gary could say more about not being a fixer or a helper.
Certainly, yeah. I actually, that's coming from actually, Twitter. You, I think you're buddies with Gil Franzal.
Mm-hmm.
I'm taking a chaplaincy course with him and a few others.
That's right.
And that came up about a month ago, and it's a whole session on fixing, helping, or are you in service, right?
Yeah.
And as a chaplain, we're trying to be in service, and we're not a therapist. We're not a social service organization. As a chaplain, we're there to serve and to listen, not fix their problems. Hey, if we can support them and get it fixed, great. But we're there to serve.
And
Where, does that make
yes,
sense?
Yes, it does. Because in reality, what they need most is to feel like they're being served. Is to feel like somebody is actually listening to them and, you know, just there. I remember one time Sims used to go to St. James and serve meals every Friday. And I used to go and leave work and walk up and serve dinner at St. James. And not every Friday. It was the Friday that was ours. I don't know. I can't remember. I think it was once a month. Anyway, I would go up and do my serving meals. And the very first night I was there, we get there early. They instructed us, told us what to do. They gave me my station of what I was going to give. And I was towards the end of the line, but not at the dessert, like the salad kind of section. Or maybe you could say the side dishes. And then the people started lining up. And I was overwhelmed by how many people were in that line. And people started coming through the line. And I would scoop out a little bit and put it on their plate. Because I'm thinking, all those people. I give you a little bit. And then they would say, can I have some more? And I would say, you know, like, okay, a little bit more. But like, watch it, because there's a whole bunch of people here. Don't be greedy. This is my thinking, right? Don't be greedy. But the people would look kind of disappointed. I mean, I think I had potatoes. And they'd look kind of disappointed because they'd say, can I have some more? And they'd have to stand there and keep asking for more while I give them a thimble spoonful more. And finally, the guy, one of the workers, came up to me and said, Tori, give them as much as they want. There's plenty. We have more food. If we run out of this, we'll make some more. I don't think I quite understood that. But as I started giving people food and giving them more and giving them what they wanted, not what I thought they should accept and be happy with. Oh my God. It was probably that first night why I went every single time we had an opportunity to serve, because I felt so great being able to actually, I don't have to fix them. I don't have to make things right. I just have to be of service and offer them this plate of food and they can have as much as they want. The whole thing changed for me. So in some respects, you can see what you're pointing to, Gary, what you're pointing to, Cubba. These are this is what the practice is pointed to as lay practitioners, because we are mixed in a world where some have more and some have less and some are lacking and some are not. This is the world we're mixed up in. And so this is where we're going to feel harm, is at this place, this intersection between our views on what we have and what we don't have, and do we have enough, and all of that. Yeah, Chris.
Yeah, no, I just really appreciated this month. I work in the retirement planning field, and so I just really appreciated your takes on, you know, wealth and what that means, and the example you gave, it was either last week or the week before, about the difference between you and your sister.
Yeah.
And, you know, I kind of fall in that saver category, and let's dial back and live pretty modestly now in hopes for a better future. And I really liked what you just said about service too. I mean, I think I think it's important to save but I'm just so much more intentional with how I look at money and what it can actually do.
Yes.
And the generosity and the connections and just being able to be of service. And, I don't know. It's not, you know, it's so, being in my industry, it's so easy to fall into that green. It's never enough. And, you know, I'll feel more secure when I have X amount. And, I think there was a study I saw, and I'll close with this, is like, you know, they said a while back, it was something like, if you had $70,000 a year, that's enough to meet your needs, but you kind of just want more, and now, I want to upgrade, that sort of thing. So
yep.
Just keeping that in mind, this has been so helpful. I was like, oh, you know, you'd think like I would be the one to be able to give advice, but you've totally helped me just kind of
that's good.
Look at things differently. So yeah.
Especially from my perspective, since I've been running around just blowing my money, you know, making it rain all the time. You know, it's like, good Lord. My boys would say, oh, is it payday? Write a check. that's what their response was. Write a check. So that's good to know. I mean, because the other thing is, your line here of practice is that you're not trying to move to the other side and give away, give away, give away. That's not the right way. The line is you knowing when you are feeling harm, when you are experiencing that resistance, that aversion, and being able to practice with that in the area of wealth. So what that line is going to look like for everybody on the screen is vastly different. So there is no, oh, you got to live like this. No, you got to live like this. It's more that each one of us are practicing up against that line that says, am I really like going overboard, or am I, you know, living within a lot of self-imposed limitations? Self-imposed because I've spent too much, or self-imposed because I won't spend enough. I mean, that's the line we're trying to live within. Each one of us is going to be different depending on how much money we have, how many resources, where, you know, just where we live, what we have, our jobs, our careers, all of that, our age, whether we have kids or not, because kids suck up all your money. You might as well don't even plan on it. But you never know that until after you start having them. And then you're like, dang it, I should have thought about this. So they're so cute, though, when they come out, you know, they're so sweet looking. And you're like, oh, I want to buy you this. I want to buy you that. Like, yeah, you're teaching them. They're going to want all the time. So, you know, a parent with kids, their money situation is vastly different than someone that's a senior. But a senior's income is pretty much set. And so their understanding around money is different. That's what this is about, learning how to be open with wherever you're at. Not be afraid of it. And then you have to talk in Sangha like this because we're all afraid of it, really, you know. We're really, it's not easy to look at this stuff. The only reason why we're doing it is because we're sitting here on a call with practitioners and we can all talk about it. But when we're at home in our own world, we may not necessarily look at the things that we're going to look at over the course of this year. But we can do it together. Well, let's see. Are we good? Anybody else have anything they want to? I can't believe I. Okay, Kath, I was going to say, good Lord, I've never been 10 minutes early. That would, early is not what I would think about me. Go ahead, Kathy.
That really resonated with me when you just said, we're all afraid of this.
Mm-hmm.
That's, it's a feeling, it's a very visceral thing, but I have never looked at it or brought it up to the front, but I've been kind of squirming in my chair all month, and now I understand.
Yeah.
It's not comfortable.
No.
I mean, I think it. I'll be more, I'll have more of these things in mind, I hope, and I think I'm getting kind of happy with this now that we're done with it.
And we're happy because we're done. But yeah, that's okay. There's going to be a month where we're going to talk about something that you're happy to talk about. You're not going to be so squirmy, and I'll be squirmy. But the thing is to be soft, because you don't have to change your view and get right in a month. That's not what we're working here. We're expanding our understanding. And if there's one thing I've learned about Dhamma, is that it's the same thing over and over and over and over and over and over and over. It really, even though we're pointing the view towards wealth, and then next month we're going to point towards technology, which I have no idea how we're going to teach on that, because there was no technology with around the Buddha. So, okay, be making it up as I go. So next month, we're going to turn to something different. But the how do I say it? The place of harm is the same. Harm is harm is harm. Tension is tension is tension. And so we are just together helping each other not be afraid to feel that tension. That's what we're actually doing. In the places in our everyday life where we don't want to feel any tension, we're trying to just get past all that. And so we're going to be able to be with all this, because we're all together and we're talking about all these various tensions. You see? Yeah, Jean, you want to get the last word?
I had a struggle with this because sometimes when I live in Ballard,
mm-hmm.
And I see this car go by, and this car is a $2 million car. I want to pick up a rock and throw it at it. And then,
why? Who in God's name can pay $2 million for a car?
Yeah.
Surely don't have me driving it, because I'm pretty hard on cars.
Well, you know, my thought is, there's this, imagine the good you could do if you took that $2 million and housed people who don't have a home. And then I thought, wouldn't I be terribly embarrassed if in the gallery view, the person in the little square next to me was one of those people?
Yeah, that's right. But not only that, Gene, you're looking at the wrong thing. Not that it's wrong, but you're looking at the wrong view. Because if you spend $2 million on a car, you got some suffering going on.
Hmm.
I mean, it didn't take a rocket science to figure that part out. Because it's a gas engine. or even if it's an electric car, it's still, the planet, the whole thing is all wrapped up in this whole $2 million. Hmm. So there's some hiding behind that car going on. And the better place to sort of see is how we suffer from our consumerism. So you may think spending $2 million for a car is crazy, but that person might think the amount of money you spend on books is a little over the top, but we're going to keep that on the down low too, right? It's like we all have things that we overspend on. So don't think that $2 million is because they have the means to pay $2 million for a car. Right. But I can remember a time when people used to buy cars in the hood and they were living in the projects and the cars out front of the house were like fancy. You don't know. See, you're judging what you see, thinking that that is the truth of the scenario. But that's not it. It's what's behind that $2 million car that's difficult. And if you look behind it, you'll see that that person is just like everybody on this call. We're trapped in these places around wealth where we are limited by our own, you know, family beliefs, traumas, all that stuff. And there's pain there. We are just willing to face that pain. Look at it, feel it, talk about it. And some people aren't. They just spend $2 million on a car because they can.
What I want to do is allow the person in the square next to me to be whoever they are. And they'll take care of themselves. And I'll be in my square and I will take care of myself.
There's true with that. But also know that the person in the square next to you is feeling the same pain.
Mm.
Just like you, they want to find a means for liberation. And it just so happens on the squares, we're trying to find it through practice. But when we go outside in the world, somebody might be trying to find it through a car. They may be trying to find it by, you know, going out partying every night. That's why people can't manage the panic of staying inside the house. But we know what that feels like. We hate it too.
Mm-hmm.
And so they got to get outside. They got to go. And they think that they're going to be happier if they can go and hang out with their friends and take their risk about COVID. But some people, they feel the pain of staying inside, but they think they're going to be happier if they stay inside and they limit their contact with other people and they'll stay safe. Who's right? I don't know. I know some people that stayed inside and they got COVID. So I'm just saying, I don't know whether or not staying inside is necessarily going to keep you safe from COVID, because that little virus is like running all over the place and it is not checking. Are you staying inside?
True.
Mm-mm. So, you know.
Thank you.
I'm just saying that the way to hold this is to hold it as just like me. They want to be free just like me, but we don't all know how to do it. We don't all know that path, and we're all afraid of the tension that comes with suffering. We just happen to encourage each other to stick with it.
It's the value of the Sangha. Yep. Thank you.
Yeah. All right, good people, as usual, 9 o'clock, at least it's not 9:01, 9:05, whatever. So next week, we will start in with technology, and we will begin to start talking about this issue, this other everyday thing that we deal with, screens, technology, the likes of it. All right, so have a good week. Thank you so much for your practice. We'll see you all next week. Bye-bye.